True friends grow separately as well as in each other's company. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you instant inspiration. True friends grow separately as well as in each other's company. Now, the statement is, to have friends, you must be a friend. And how are you a friend? Are you a friend by telephoning your friend, by talking to your friend, by writing to your friend, by spending time with your friend? Or are you a friend because you just enjoy the other person's company, and when you're there, and when you're not there, you are enjoying somebody else's company? You're doing your own thing. You see, most people think of friendship in the word possession. They possess that. That's my friend, my bestest friend, in the whole world, you know. And the bestest friend in the whole world is one that you can get along with fine or not. You don't have to be in their presence. You don't have to do anything. A friend of mine, as we were driving long distance one time, we were just driving quietly. We were sitting together and not talking. And we're both loquacious people. And Edith Merriam. And as we were driving along, we hadn't talked for maybe an hour. And then she turned to me and she says, "You know, Herb, the test of true friends are when people can be together and not have to talk, not have to keep, you know, batting off their mouth." And I said, "That's very true. That's very true. You don't think about it, but that's very true. True friends are just there." Now, we saw a movie. Do you remember the title of it last night, the Dickens movie?
Nickleby.
Very touching movie. And the lead character was quite a charmer. And he befriended a young man who was in the school that he was teaching in. And the young man was treated as a slave. And he had rickets and a few other unhappy circumstances about his body because he didn't get sunlight or vitamins or food or anything else. He was growing up, and so his body did not have all the things it needed for a normal operation. So he was dragging his legs around, and it's quite pathetic. Well, Nickleby ends up, as I say, befriending the young man and taking the young man away from the captive arrangement that he was in, where he was treated like a slave. And the young man was naturally eternally grateful. And he did not trust totally. He was afraid that at any moment his new friend might dump him to go on into something more lucrative or more wonderful. Well, he had the opportunity. The friend had the opportunity to have more lucrative, more wonderful things, and the young man was a drag on him, but it wasn't a drag on him because he just did not think of himself as not having the young man there, mm-hmm. not having his mother and his sister as part of his family that needed to be taken care of. Naturally, the Dickens movies have you in the pauperville and very rich and very poor. I mean, there's no in-betweens. But,
very good and very evil.
And very good and very evil. Oh, yes, that's very sure. And so he befriends this young man. And he talks to him, and he said, the young man says, "Well, will you ever leave me? I don't want you to ever leave me." And he says, "No, I won't." You know. And he says, "I have some secret I want to tell you, but I cannot tell you right now." And so later, as he is ready to expire, he tells Nickleby the secret, which is unimportant. But the thing is that Nickleby had such a tremendous compassion for this young man and the troubles he was going through. You could just see it written all over him, his deep caring, his friendship for this young person. And, of course, it ends up that the kid dies and he's his cousin. And, you know, they're related and he doesn't even know it and all that sort of good stuff. But he treated him well. Now, he didn't write him letters. He didn't spend a lot of time talking to him. He didn't spend a lot of time buddy-buddying with him, because they were a few years apart in age, not too far. But each one had a deep respect for themselves first, for themselves and their morals and their ethics and their way of conducting themselves. And they had a deep respect for the people in their world. Like this one woman, her father was quite a cruel and inhumane person, and he was dying of consumption and everything else, and he wouldn't let her go out and get a job. He wouldn't let her sell her paintings to make money so that they could continue living at all. And Nickleby, of course, had great compassion for the lady, and he naturally would create himself in a situation of being beneficial to her, which did happen. But you see, these are the things that take place. These are the things that take place in friendship. Friendship finds itself involved in great dramas and simple dramas. Simple things that mean nothing at all, like playing together in the sandbox. And you say, I don't have any truck. Well, here, take mine. Never thinking that you don't have a truck now to play with, but you give it to your friend. But, and then if your friend says, can I take it home? You say, sure, of course. And you don't even think the fact he takes it home and you're not going to have that truck anymore. See, friendship doesn't think of those things. Friendship just merely thinks that, hey, whatever I have is to share. Whatever I have, and to give to my friend. I gave my friend, you know. And you don't really think it in that respect, you just do it. Now that's magic. Well, true friendship grows, not necessarily in the presence of one another, but even in the absence. I have a very dear friend, Fred Smart, and we grew up together, and I sort of worshipped and loved and admired him and respected him in every way. He's 2 years older than I, but he taught me everything about farming and stuff like that. Let me, a little punk city kid, come and, you know, watch him and do things with him. But he didn't treat me like a little brother. He didn't treat me like something strange. He just treated me like a friend. And he conned me. I mean, I know that. He had a lot of work to do on the ranch, on their farm. And I'm sure that he gave me some of the fun jobs. And he did the other things, you know. But he wasn't stupid. But nonetheless, I never complained because Fred was giving me these things to do. Fred was the one that I admired. And all through high school, I would go out to his farm, and you know, when Saturdays or what have you, or on the holidays, we'd go out to our lake cottage, which was right near his farm. And so I got to know him real well. Well, I came home from the Navy, and I was on leave, and so I went to see Fred, because he was home too, from the Air Force. And so what happens? He's building a new house for his wife and several children. And he says, well, Herb, I haven't got room in the new house for you, you know. And it's not done. And my wife is staying over with her father next door and the family. But you come on, we go to our old house. So I went with him to the old house, and we stayed overnight in the old house. And we didn't talk very much, but we belonged, you know. We were wonderful friends that just felt good in each other's presence. And I hadn't seen him for many, many years, you know. And yet, that was it. Then, one day, he came to visit me in Newark, California. I had a newspaper there. And up comes his great, big, gigantic semi-trailer truck, Smart Trucking, you know, his own company. He had a bunch of trucks. And so he says, hi, Herb, how you doing? You know, just like. And he comes into our kitchen and eats with us and visits with us. And then the next day, he takes off on his journey again. And then his mother called me. We were in Newport Beach at the time. And his mother says, Herb, will you talk to Fred? His wife was at breakfast yesterday. And as she was eating her breakfast, she just put her head on the table and died. And they had they had a five-year-old boy and two daughters who were, you know, older. But just like a clip. And so I called him, and we had a good talk. And it was a talk in many positive ways, you know. And his wife, Mary, had been a dear friend of mine, too. And so we just, you know, were able to say things back and forth. And he always knew I was there. But his mother, how she knew where I was, I don't know. But I used to go with the daughters. They had about five daughters, too. And but the mother called me and wanted me to. And she received the gist. She received all these other things that I do, because I sent it to Fred and to her and everybody. And I thought, now that really is a touch of friendship. Mm-hmm. Because he certainly had many people who were significant in his life there, but none that were significant like this friendship that does not need to be together to grow. Because even in our separateness, we were as much bound, if you will, by joy in each other's presence as we were when we were kids. We were the Three Musketeers. Some other kid joined us in the Three Musketeers. And the other kid was a little more sophisticated in ways he shouldn't be. And we were all about the same age. Now, this kid was having relationships with girls, you know. And in fact, his parents were away during the day, and so he and his sister would have people over, and they would have relationships. And I thought to myself, my goodness sakes, you know, which I didn't judge because I didn't care. It's their business. But Fred says, that's so stupid. That's so stupid. That's something precious. And I thought, ah, Fred, you and I are on another tack together, you know, that relationships are precious. You don't just sell them, so to speak. But they did. And, you know, you learn something more about your friend. Not he could have said nothing, you know. He could have participated in the activities if he had chosen. But he just said the one or two little words, that's so stupid, you know. And it was really so such a precious thing to have him say that, you know, in that way. And it sort of even bound our friendship into a more glorious relationship. And that was great. You see, friendships are not necessarily the things that happen because you're on each other's back all the time, that you're drinking buddies and that you're fooling around buddies and you're hunting buddies and you're doing this and that. And that doesn't make friendships. I know I went deer hunting with my dad when I was about 13, and I didn't know how to do anything. But Mother taught me how to cook so that I could cook for the guys and then be allowed to come along at 13. And of course, I was very able to do many things. So I cooked for them and I made good meals and they enjoyed them. And then one time they brought home a bunch of rabbits that they caught, because the rabbits were running around, boom, boom, boom. They got to shoot something. There's nothing else to shoot, you know. So they brought these rabbits in, and I thought, well, I'll make some Hasenpfeffer. And so I prepared the rabbits and all the veggies and made up a big soup bowl, you know, big tub of soup, and it smells so good. And I tasted it while I was cooking. And my dad comes back from his hunting story, and he says, what's this? And I told him. He says, rabbits at this time of the year are known to have certain diseases, and you shouldn't really make them. You shouldn't eat them. And he took the whole bit and dumped it out. And I thought, oh, you know, my first real gourmet delight that I made at that time. But then I would listen to the guys, him and his fellow business people. He would go deer hunting with the men that he worked with during the day, you know, job who he was a building contractor, and he had subcontractors and other contractors and architects, and they'd all get together and go deer hunting together. And it was so interesting. They sat around in this little cabin. It was just about a third of the dining room here. And the beds were all, you know, deep, built 3 or 4 high. And they'd sit there with this pot-bellied stove burning away because it was cold outside, playing cards. And I listened because I wanted to hear what friends talked about when they're together. And I was 13. I had never had the privilege of being with my dad and all his buddies, because they'd go down the basement in our recreation room and they'd play games, and us kids were not allowed down there. Up, out of here, out, you know. and they'd have their beer and their scotch and their things, you know. And so I listened. And they didn't say anything. They talked about their hunting. They talked about what they didn't see. And they talked about the tracks and what should have been there. But after about 2 or 3 hours, they didn't say anything. And so I went to bed. Maybe that's when they started talking. But it was fantastic. Here are these friends didn't have to say anything between each other. They didn't have to talk about business. They didn't have to talk about the workaday world. They didn't have to talk about how much they appreciated each other as people. They were just there. And to the ending days of my father's business before he sold it, they were always dear friends. And I still know them. You know, they're always dear friends. But I often wondered, what was it that drew them together? And I will probably never really know. Because they were probably like Edith Mary and I as we're driving along a long distance without speaking. Not because we had nothing to say, but because we didn't have to say something. And they, playing their cards together, doing their poker games and whatever they were doing, didn't have to say anything. Which reminds me of my mother and her friends who were the neighbors. They would have games in each other's houses. They'd play bridge. And these women would sit around. And they didn't gossip much, but they would just sit around and play bridge, and it was thing so boring to me. But you see, those ladies were right at each other's doorstep whenever there was a need. Whenever there was a tragedy, or whenever there was a need in the family, a new baby, whenever there was somebody with an injury or something, or some happy time, they were always together. And really, friendship doesn't need to grow on your presence. It grows on your love for one another, your unconditional sharing love, where you seek nothing from the other, you need nothing from the other, you're just being yourself and having fun. So I think if all of us can look at the experiences we have in life and draw out of those experiences what real friendship is, not possession, as much as we have been taught to think it's possession. It's not possession, but it's unconditional love. And I'm sure, there's more unconditional love going on in this world than we'll ever know. And that's lovely. And that suits me just fine. Well, you all have a lovely afternoon, and think about this beautiful idea here, and you just watch how many friends you have that you never paid any attention to, and they're always there in your heart, your mind, and your unconditional love. I love you, I love you, I love you.